I love old houses. My wife and I, when we moved here, we moved into a very old house. Moved to Michigan from Alabama, or from Iowa, and from Alabama and then to Iowa. We just kept going further north, and we got here to Michigan and spent our first winter here in 1997. And we moved on the lake. We rented an old, old house on the lake. It was a beautiful house. And for the first month, September was great, going out on the beach and swimming. October wasn't even so bad. And then November and December hit. And I couldn't believe the wind that came off the lake. It was a nice old house, except it had no insulation whatsoever. In fact, upstairs, the bedrooms were so small that in our bedroom, we had our bed hit three walls. And I remember one night when I was deep, deep asleep, waking up to what I thought felt like an earthquake. We had a cat. I thought the cat was on the bed, jumping up and down. The whole bed was shaking. The wind was blowing, and it was shaking our bed inside the house. That's how bad the insulation was. We were there for about 7-8 months, and maybe not even that, and we moved out and rented a different place. I love old houses, but sometimes old houses don't have the insulation. And that's what we're talking about today, insulating our house, protecting it from the outside. Old houses don't have to be necessarily bad, as we'll discover in this story in 1 Samuel. I love this story. It really catches my attention. It's probably one of my favorite passages in the Bible. It's the story where God is in charge. He is the theocracy. That is the form of government, meaning theo, God, ocracy, God in charge. Instead of a democracy, it was a theocracy. In other words, God ran the government, God ran the business, God ran everything. Until 1 Samuel chapter 8, there hadn't been really a king. There had been a prophet, a man of God who spoke for God. And so when we come up to this time, I love the term because everybody comes to Samuel and they kind of bombard him and they say, "Hey, Samuel, you're really old and your ways are really old." And all of a sudden, you have this old house. And so that's what I called the sermon this morning, this old house. Now, my grandfather, I remember as a kid going to visit him in South Dakota. He has an old house. In fact, my parents live there today. And it was built in 1893 by my great-great-grandfather, who came across on a Yellowstone Trail that runs right through our property. And it's really nostalgic and historic. And I remember as a kid going there, I loved this old house. I remember going to my grandpa's house. The first thing that had nothing to do with the house, except it was grandpa's, is when you walked up to the porch, you could always smell chocolate chip cookies. And I can still remember that smell, grandma making cookies. It always smelled like grandma's cookies. And then you go into the house, into the kitchen, you grab a couple of cookies, and they had this old breakfast nook. And some of you may not even know what a nook is. But basically, it was two long pews with a table, and everybody had to slide in and everybody had to slide out to get in and out of it because they had a large family, 7 children. And so I remember that as a kid going there, the breakfast nook. I remember going into the living room. They had the old wooden floors, and Grandpa had this old Victrola with the big, thick records that you would spin the Victrola and put those old records on, and we still have that in the house today. I remember going up in the attic. And even in the old basement in the jar cellar. And the things that you could find as a kid in an old house. It was the neatest thing to find old toys and old train sets and old baseball cards. And just opening up cabinets, not sure quite what you're going to find. In fact, when I still go visit my parents, every once in a while, I'll go down to the basement, which still hasn't changed in about 100 years. And you go through and you find some old boxes or some old cabinets and you open up. And it's just kind of an adventure. I'm not sure what I'm going to find. And I love that old house. I really do. It makes you feel warm and loved. Because you know over 5 generations of my family have been in there. And it has been a warm, loving place. And it makes you feel good just walking in the house. You just feel like there's going to be cookies there. And there always are. Mom has carried the tradition very well. There's always cookies. And it's a wonderful old house. Well, I want to talk to you about that because when we talk about insulating our house, I believe we live in a world that sometimes our homes aren't quite so insulated with that warmth and love. As one person put it a long time ago, I get saved a lot. And I said, "Well, why?" They said, "Because I leak all over." Now, you think about that. We have houses. Last week, we had in here Outside, there were 40, 50-mile-an-hour winds, and we had in here an air conditioner blowing, but it wasn't the air conditioner. Everybody said, Pastor, it was so cold in here Sunday. Do you know there's a hole in the roof? And I looked up, and right above one of the vents, there's an air breather. Well, with the wind blowing, it was shooting 40, 50-mile-an-hour winds right into this area. And I kept thinking, I must be preaching bad, because people were getting up and walking out. But they would come back in, but they had jackets and scarves. And I thought, wow, it's really cold in here. Of course, I'm under these lights, so I couldn't quite tell, but it was cold. We leaked a lot last week. It wasn't quite so warm. And I think sometimes our homes need to be insulated. And when we find this story, what was happening is maybe they needed some insulation. I know a couple things about insulation. We have some R13 up here. And I want to talk to you about the three R's. The R13 is the rating of this insulation, how good it is. And I don't want to talk to you about reading, writing, and arithmetic. I want to talk to you about three R's of making sure your house is insulated when the cold winds of the world blow. What happens when something tragic happens in your life? What do you do in your life? Or what happens when you're attacked? I couldn't believe this young man yesterday. He said to me, yeah, my coach, my teacher at school said, well, you believe in this whole Easter thing. That's the winds blowing in, trying to influence, trying to get in. You see, we put up insulation not to keep what's on the inside from necessarily getting out. We try to put the insulation up because what's on the outside is trying to make the temperature on the inside the same as the outside. And it's trying to adapt us. And so we put up insulation so that we can keep the heat the way it is, or in the summertime, the cool the way it is. Now, those of you that are in heating and air conditioning, you know a whole lot more about this than I do. But those of you that are into spiritual things, we all should understand this, that we live in a world that would try to come into our lives and cause us to adapt and be exactly like it. I want you to take a look at Samuel here for a minute. Some people think of Samuel as a pastor. He's not just a pastor. If Samuel were here today, some of you would not be attending this church if he pastored. I want to let you know a little bit about his personality. Samuel's not, it's a nice name. Let's name our son Sam. What a great biblical name. Well, if you have a son who likes to lop people's heads off because he gets mad at them, Samuel was a warrior. He was one of the most feared men of the day. Historians write about this guy from every culture. Samuel's not just recorded in the Bible. Samuel's the kind of guy that walked around with his warrior medallions on. And when he walked into a community, people kind of said, what's he doing here? Who's in trouble? Because he came in and he cleaned house. He wasn't just a pastor. He was a judge. And he brought God swift judgment. In fact, there was a king one time that Israel was fighting against, and they captured this entire community, and the king, they let him live, and Samuel says, this guy's not supposed to be alive. And the guy says, well, what are you going to do now? And he's feeling pretty good about himself, like, they're just going to take me on down to Guantanamo Bay. I mean, I'm going to just live the rest of my life as a prisoner, but I'm a king. What are you going to do? Samuel just walked up to him, looked around the room, says, hey, why is this guy alive? And the guy's standing there smiling, and if you read the story, he's kind of smiling, and Samuel goes up, takes a sword out, and just boom, just without question, kills the guy. And everybody goes, okay. He says, I don't ever want to see this again. Listen, when God speaks, you do what he says. And this guy's an enemy. He's been killing babies. He's been raiding villages. He's been killing women and children. This guy was not to be alive. You were told that. And could you imagine everybody sitting around going, not me. I don't want to be next. So I want you to know, Samuel's not just this guy that, you know, some of you would say, I don't agree with this. I don't agree with this Samuel guy. That's why I said, if he were your pastor, I'm not quite sure you'd be attending the church. Because he'd probably get right up in, as they say today, in your grill. Right? Isn't that it? He'd be all up in your grill. That's right. What does that mean? That means he'd hit you head on, and he'd be right in your headlights going, what do you think you're doing? You're like, get off the car. Leave me alone. I'm trying to get away from this stuff. And he'd say, oh, no, you're not going anywhere. And he would be the kind of guy that would confront you about anything going on in your life, anything at all, anything that you're doing wrong. And you know what? He wouldn't just call you up once, well, you know, I've been thinking as your pastor, maybe you and the missus ought to come on in for some counseling. Oh, no, no, no. He's going to be at your house, knocking on your door or kicking it in, sitting you down on the couch and maybe slapping you around a little bit. Now, if that's the kind of pastor you want, you just found Samuel. I want to give you a little bit of history. He was feared. When he showed up at Jesse's house, where little King David was just a boy, Jesse and everybody in town says, what's Samuel doing here? You read that story, and most people don't talk about that part of it. They were afraid because Samuel came to town. Everybody feared Samuel. Now that you know who he is, let me talk about this old house. In verse 1, Samuel grew old. Of course he did. He appointed his sons as judges. Of course he did. My kids are going to take over for me. I mean, our kids should always. Wouldn't you love to have your kids grow up with all the values and just honor you and just make you proud by being everything you'd hope they'd be that they could be? His sons took over. And it talks about the names of his son. There was Joel. And there was Abijah. And they served at Beersheba. But look at what it says in verse 3. It says, but his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. So I want to talk to you about the three R's this morning, because sometimes people think this old house, oh, you're just old. You ever have anybody say that? Kids, you ever say that to your parents? My parents are just old. I mean, think about that. We live in a world where, I mean, parents don't understand us. Parents could never understand us, right? I mean, parents are old. What do they know? I mean, they don't understand my generation. How could parents possibly know that we're born in the 40s or 50s or maybe some of you in the 60s or later? How could they possibly know kids who were born in the 80s or the 90s? I mean, come on. World is so different today. In fact, I have a quote here from about teenagers. Children today, they love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for their elders, and they love to talk in place of exercise. Children are tyrants. They don't serve their household. They no longer rise when older people enter the room. They contradict their parents. They chatter. They talk when in front of company. They gobble up their food at the table. They cross their legs, and they tyrannize their teachers. That was written by Socrates a long, long time ago. Things haven't changed so much. But you know what? We still have the same attitude. Oh, you're old. You couldn't understand this. And here's the problem. We have these houses, and people look at these houses and go, look at this old house. And I want to let you know, your house may be old, but it can be well insulated from the things of the world. You can have a strong household no matter how old your home is. You can have a house of love, a godly home. Here's the three R's I want to give you. And the R is just that rating. The first one is resistance. I think that's the first thing we ought to have in our lives. They didn't have any resistance. I love what it says. It said that Samuel had two sons, and they no longer followed in their dad's ways. I think they started out pretty good, don't you? Don't you think if this is your dad, kids, if your dad was this Samuel guy that I said, don't you think? And he's like, I'll take you out to the woodshed. You may not come back. You know, that kind of dad. Now, I grew up with that kind of dad. Okay. Some of you could relate to this. I had the kind of dad who believed in putting the fear of God in you. And he did it with corporal punishment. And he was a major pain with his corporal punishment. And I generally accepted it all the way. I remember my father at an early age was a very strong disciplinarian. Wouldn't you just think to yourself, I don't think I'm going to rub this guy the wrong way. I remember one time my father, I remember one time in my life, my father saying something to me and I challenged him at the age of 16. Now, my father had been in Vietnam. He was a gunner sergeant in Vietnam. My father had been 14 years on a police department as a sergeant detective of homicide and narcotics. My father was a black belt in judo. This is the man that I decided one night at dinner to challenge. When he said something to me and I said, that's all I did. He said something to me he was sitting to my left. I was sitting at the end of the table. I was eating some corn on the cob, and he simply wanted to make sure my chore was done, which it wasn't. And he said something to me, and I thought, oh, you know, I was so frustrated at that moment, and I don't know why I did it, but I just simply smacked my tongue. And I went, and before I knew it, I was staring at the ceiling on my back, holding on to my corn on the cob, thinking, that hurt. That was stupid. I'll never do that again. As I'm laying there, I kind of got up, pulled myself together, and he says, so do we have an understanding? We had a very good understanding. Now, that's the way my father chose to do it. You would think that you would walk in his ways. Samuel's two sons, I believe, started out walking in his ways, but slowly things changed. I don't think anything happens too fast. I don't think, kids, that you wake up one day at the age of five and say, you know, I think I'll rebel against my parents for the rest of my life. You know, I think I'm going to leave my room a mess no matter how many times they scream at me and threaten to ground me from air. I don't think that happens. But somewhere along the way, Samuel's sons, looking at their dad, probably serving very well, somewhere somebody kind of came in and slipped a $20 bill into their pocket and said, hey, and it says they perverted justice and they no longer followed their dad's ways. And I think it happens slowly, like the frog in the kettle. I think we have leaks in our house. I think every once in a while we get these leaks in our house, and pretty soon there's a small hole. And what starts out as a small hole begins to grow. And pretty soon you look and you see it, and it just starts making its way in, and it finds its way in. And I believe that's what happens in our lives. I don't think any of us intend in our marriages, I don't think any of us intend in our families, to have things fall apart. Nobody, Nello, at their wedding day says, you know, I'm so glad we're getting married today, but tomorrow I'm not sure we're going to make it. I don't think anybody starts out that way. But somewhere along the way, life begins to happen, and slowly we have leaks in our lives. And then it begins to happen. And somewhere Samuel's sons got that frog in the kettle. You know the frog in the kettle? You put a frog into a kettle that's 150 degrees, and that frog's going to hop right out. But the frog in the kettle, it's a whole book that was written about taking a frog into a lukewarm water and then turning the heat up ever so slowly. And what's amazing about a frog is it has the unique ability to have its body temperature adjust to its environment. And it will change to the heat. If you slowly increase the heat, the temperature of that frog will slowly increase without being discomforted. Now listen, without being discomforted, the frog will adjust to its environment to the place where the frog will finally explode. Do not try this at home. Why am I looking over at this group? Do not try this at home, Larry. This is not homework. What's amazing is, listen to this, I believe that we have the unique, not in our skin, but in our spirits, we have the unique ability, just like Samuel's son, to not have that resistance in our lives. If we don't have resistance in our lives, I believe that as the world turns up the temperature, we slowly adapt to our environment. And one day we are going to explode and say, what happened? I couldn't believe I turned on TV this weekend and another school shooting. And everybody shakes their head saying, we're going to up the ante. We're going to up the security. We're going to up our emergency procedures. And I say, you can keep upping everything, but if you don't have resistance in your life and our community, because we just keep adapting and just allowing things, if we don't change something, it's never going to be any different. And so in our own lives, if we don't have the resistance in our lives, we're going to be just like Samuel's sons, going, hey, we just give in. I don't have any resistance. If you don't have good resistance, it's just going to come right on into your godly home. And it amazes me how much crud comes into godly homes without intending it to happen. It's amazing. I know, folks, when you go home today, none of you are going to intend to have a fight. None of you are going to intend to have an argument. None of you are going to intend to have just kind of have the gasket just come loose. But you know what? There's a chance it could happen because we live in a high-pressure society. Financially, maritally, children, you name it. We live in a society that's high pressure. And if you don't have insulation, that pressure can leak right into your house. And the next thing we know, we blow a gasket because we become just like the society. And we see it every day. And so I say to you, don't become that frog in the kettle. It's amazing how some things have changed and what's happened in our society through that. You know what kills us? What kills us isn't so much that you go, look at the gap in my house. You know what? You'll shut the window if you have a big gap. You know what kills us is a small little leak that you've been looking at for the last year in your house and you haven't done anything about it yet. You know what kills us isn't so much that you're going to go out and spend $20,000 and buy a brand new car this year. It's the small things that eat at our lives. It's the little things. It's like standing at the dam, seeing the hole and going and plugging it. Guess what, folks? That's not it. We have got to get the insulation in our lives. It was amazing to me that in the turn of the century, a guy rose up in Chicago by the name of Al Capone. He became known as one of the most notorious men who's ever lived. He owned governments. He owned judges, entire police departments. He ran his operation in cities around the country, probably at the time more powerful than most people in Washington, D.C., as far as what happened in the United States. If he wanted someone dead, they were dead. If he wanted extortion and money, he had all the money he wanted. They couldn't get him on anything. They couldn't get him on the big things. You know what they got him on? Tax evasion. The little things. And he went to prison on tax evasion. And you know what killed him? He contracted a sexually transmitted disease for fooling around in a relationship with women. Wasn't the huge things. Somebody didn't come in with a Tommy gun and finish him off. He just fooled around a little bit. And he died of syphilis in prison. A horrible disease. You know, it's not the big things that are going to wipe you out, folks. It's the little leaks that we allow in our house. And so the resistance, here's the R factor for a resistance. What follows after R? S. Very good. And here's what our resistance is. Following, if you want the R factor for resistance, we need Shekinah. Those of you that are writing things down, write down the word Shekinah. Don't ask me to spell it. It's Shekinah. It's a Hebrew word. Here it is. It simply means we need thickness. Right here, this is R13. This is pretty good stuff. But this is not what I have in my house. Oh, no. Last year, or a couple years ago, I knew my house was kind of leaking. So I went and I rented a machine. I went up into my attic and they told me you need 8 inches. 8 inches is going to give you this R factor, this thickness will give you all of this and keep your heat in. I said, okay, if 8 inches is good, 2 feet is going to be great. And so I went up into my attic and I had that machine and they're feeding it. They were downstairs feeding it. I've got the mask on and I'm up there shooting the entire attic 2 feet deep. And I said, I'm getting all the R factor I can. And I've got a thickness. And the word thickness is the Hebrew word Shekinah, which refers to God. In the tent of meetings, God comes and visits Moses, and he brought his Shekinah glory. And the entire people assembled around looked, and they said, look at how thick that cloud is, and look how that cloud has come and covered up the tent of meetings. And God says, I want to come into your presence in such a thickness. Could you imagine that? I know I've got a pretty good thickness. It's wintertime. I'm eating real well this winter, and I'm not cold at all. The thicker it is, the warmer I am. And you know what? In my life, I want spiritually to have a thickness in my life where God's Shekinah comes into my life and says, Mitch, I want you to know something. I've got you. There's no leakage here. You don't have to worry about the world coming into you. You've got the thickness of God. How in the world can it get to you? And the Shekinah of God is the thickness. And you know how you get the Shekinah? When you come into a place of worshiping God. When you come into a place when you allow His presence. Practice His presence every day. And when God's presence comes into your house, can I tell you folks, in between every wall, at your dinner table, in your kid's bedroom, at every meal, in every place of your house, the thickness of God is there. You go into your kids' rooms and you pray, God, my dad used to pray this prayer. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. It was a simple prayer. But you know what? If you just go into your kids' rooms and you pray a prayer and you invite God's presence, you are inviting a thickness and saying, God, don't allow anything to come into this home or into my child's life. God, here's my marriage. I want to pray over my marriage. And my wife and I pray over our marriage and our relationship. There's a thickness now that comes and it just kind of covers us and it surrounds us. Because the Bible says that the world is trying to conform us to get us into its temperature. And the world has gotten into the church. We know that. The church leaks all over the place. When you look at the statistics, 61% of divorces in America, 61%. And then they went into the churches and they said, let's see what's happening in the churches. You know what they found? 61% of the families that say we believe in God, we believe in His power, we believe in His love and forgiveness, 61% are divorcing in the church. The church is leaking. We can't have godly churches until we have godly homes. Your home becomes godly and grace becomes a godly church. We need the thickness of God. Invite God's presence into your house. Pray God's presence into your house. Shekinah, Isaiah experienced this. I love Isaiah. In chapter 6, He's just having prayer time. He's just worshiping. He's kind of praying. And all of a sudden, God's Shekinah comes on him. And he says, I saw the Lord high and lifted up, exalted. And the train of his robe, it filled the temple. And a smoke came and it filled up the temple. And I said, woe am I, for I am a man of unclean lips. And the angel of the Lord came from heaven and he took the tongs and he grabbed a coal from heaven and he touched my lips. And he says, man, you are now clean. Because God's presence comes in. He says, you don't have to be unclean. You don't have to have leaks in your house. You can have a godly home in your house. The reason that Samuel's boys didn't follow their dad's ways is because, one, they didn't have any resistance. Somewhere along the way, they just let it go and said, God, no more resistance. No more of your glory. And you don't read about the Shekinah glory from this point on in their relationship. The second thing is rejection. We need resistance, and then this rejects. This ought to reject the things trying to come in. The problem is, instead of rejecting the things coming in, I believe that the church is rejecting the things that are already inside. Look at what it says in verse 7 and verse 6. But when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord in verse 7. And the Lord told him, listen to all that these people are saying. Listen to what they're saying. It is not you they have rejected, but who? That's right. They're rejecting God. Can you believe these people are rejecting God? How do you get to a place where you reject God in a society, in a home? How do you know God and then turn around and go, you know what, God? No thanks. I don't want this anymore in my life. How does anybody get to the place where God would do what he does in our lives and then to turn around and say, you know what? No thanks. I don't know how that necessarily happens. But I think it goes something like this. Kids, you'll enjoy this. Those of you that are in your 50s and 60s, I think you'll enjoy this. My great-grandparents used to listen to some music. I'd listen to these old Victrola things, and I thought, what in the world is this? And I'd spin those records when I'd go home every once in a while. And I thought, my great-grandparents listen to this stuff? You have got to be kidding me. And you know what? Their parents probably said, what's that stuff you're listening to? Swing music. That's the devil's music. And then there, you know what? They grew up. And then they said to their kids, that guy up there swinging his hip and that leg, he's the devil. You know what I'm talking about, right? Elvis the Pelvis. And when he came out, the church went, he's the devil. And all the parents like, I can't believe this. And then with him in that era, the Beatles. The Invasion. And then they grew up. Oh, that music's not so bad. And then they looked at their kids, some of you guys, and said, oh, the music our kids are listening to, it's the devil. And it just keeps happening. And they started listening to this. Someone by the name of Led Zeppelin and AC/DC, which is, isn't that an outlet or something? And a group by the name of Kiss, Knights in Satan's Service. That's the devil's music, these kids today, all these kids today. And then they grew up, or we grew up. And then we turned to our kids and we said, what are you listening to? And they were listening to stuff like, oh, here it is, Devo and punk music, A Flock of Seagulls, Duran Duran. What is that stuff? And then that group grew up. And we looked at our kids and said, what are you listening to? And this lady came out with all these clothes and saying, like a virgin. And Daddy Don't Preach. And her name was Madonna. And everybody started dressing like her. And everybody's like, oh, that's the devil. Pastor, what are you going to do about this? My kids are listening to Madonna. And I said, oh, yeah, nothing like what you listen to. It was an itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini. Or it was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. And Madonna came out. Oh, my goodness. Material Girl. And they're growing up. And the next generation started listening to a group called Two Live Crew, and the society went, oh, what's happening to our kids? And the Congress got involved, and they passed laws, put stickers on music saying bad music, and kids walked in and bought it anyway. So, you know, and then they grew up. Now we've got great stuff like Ludacris and Marilyn Manson and Eminem and other stuff that I can't pronounce or say publicly. And we call it music. And you can hear it. Just drive down Pine Grove. I'm sure somebody's got a system that they want to share with you while you're driving down the road. And you look over and say, thank you. Just 1 minute. I've got my Barry Manilow right here. It's the Copa. Copa Cabana. Kids are going, Barry who? Some of you are going, I have that album. I bought that right after the ABBA concert. You guys. And so society changed. And you know what? We don't think much of it because, hey, it's not that big a deal. Because they'll grow up and then they'll make fun of whoever's next because that's the devil. Think about television, how it's changed. It started out with some of you or your parents used to watch great shows like Ozzie and Harriet. And My Three Sons. Some were going, who's Ozzie and Harriet? And then that generation grew up, and they had someone called I Love Lucy. And I Love Lucy, they had to sleep in separate beds. And she got pregnant with her son, for real, her and her husband, Desi Arnaz, and they had a baby. But she couldn't use the word pregnant on television. The censor says, we can't use words like that. And I can't make this stuff up. This is the world we live in. And then that group, you know, from I Love Lucy, we went to a wholesome show of a blended family, the Brady Bunch. A story of a lovely lady and a man named Brady, and they came together and had a Brady Bunch. And then from there, we went and we got the dad out of it, and we went to the Partridge Family. And there was a single mom raising her family. Then we went from that to the Simpsons. Cool it, dude, or whatever he says. And we went from the Simpsons cartoons, actually right before that, we went to Three's Company. Innocent, just move in. Men and women moving in together. Hey, it's innocent. Then we went to the Simpsons. Then we went to the Bundys. And we went to all these other shows. And then Ozzy Osbourne went from the music and he went into his family show. And then we went into, now there's a show out called Snoop Doggy Dogg's Fatherhood. The greatest father in America, front page, Rolling Stone magazine. I bought the article. When I see greatest father, that gets my attention. And Snoop Doggy Dogg with a giant marijuana stick in his mouth saying greatest father in America. But hey, we just leak a little bit, okay? Let's not pick on society. And what happens is pretty soon those things start getting into our homes and we begin to tolerate them and the frog in the kettle. And we have no resistance because we don't have the Shekinah of God. And if you start asking people, you know, you could name all of the people. You could probably name the Brady Bunch children, but name the 12 disciples. You could probably name the different people on certain shows, but name the three that were with Christ at the Transfiguration. We could probably name certain shows and songs that they sing, but try naming the 66 books of the Bible. You see what I'm saying? The Shekinah has gone. That's the R factor of resistance. Well, the R factor of rejection, what follows R? Good job. Is a huge word called sanctification. And Jesus used this word. This isn't something I paid $60,000 and 6 years of college for. The word sanctification, Jesus said, sanctify them, Father. And so I'm going to say that for you. Every one of you in this room, I ask that God would sanctify you. That simply means this. Set them apart. Make them different. Please, God, don't let them be like everybody else. Make them different. And Samuel standing there, and they all said, hey, we want to be like everyone else. And Samuel's going, no, God chose you to not be like everybody else. And now we've gotten a few thousand years later, and we're all saying, we want to be like everyone else. And God is saying, no, I don't want you to be like everyone else. Because if everyone else is so happy, then why is nobody else very happy? why not give them something different and be different in your life? You know, we spend our time growing up. And when I was in fifth grade, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I was going to be a sergeant detective of homicide and narcotics. In fifth grade, I knew this. In fact, in college, my first 3 years of college were criminal justice, pre-law. I knew I was going to be a cop. I was going to be in the CIA, FBI, whatever. But I knew I was going to follow in my dad's footsteps because my dad was the greatest guy in the entire world. I had that in my home, and I wanted to be just like him. But you know what? I began to reject his values slowly, that rejection. Instead of rejecting the world, I began rejecting him. I remember in fifth grade turning in my friends for doing drugs in California. You say, fifth grade? Yeah, fifth grade. They got caught with marijuana in my house, having a huge party, came home from a football game. My sister's there. There's kids just scattering everywhere, jumping out bathroom windows. I remember they were flying out of everywhere, beer bottles and stuff. And my dad happened to nab three of them. This is great. Kids, when your parents come home and catch you, it's probably, hey, these guys need to leave. When my parents came home and caught us, it was handcuffs, okay? So consider your blessings. Three friends were handcuffed, my sisters and my friends, were handcuffed on our couch waiting for backup units to come and arrest them. Yeah, a little different. And the one guy says, hey, reach in my pocket, get this out of here. And I reach in his pocket and there was some marijuana and I was so excited. I was, Dad, this guy's got dope! And my dad came in, this guy looked at me and says, I'm going to kill you. I said, Dad, he's going to kill me. Arrest him, put him away for life. I wanted so much to be like my dad. That was fifth grade. By the summer of my eighth grade year, I was with two friends sitting in St. Basil's outside a playground at a Catholic school when Ricardo Savage, who's 6'9" and with his afro probably about 7'2", in eighth grade, handed me, for the first time ever, a marijuana joint. And I remember looking at him, and I knew what I wanted to be. Listen, what do you reject? Do you reject the values of God and your Father, or do you reject the things of this world? And I'd rejected the things of this world up until that day, that moment, just a little innocent thing. And I remember smoking that, and it wasn't even really dope. It was banana peelings dried up. And I had the worst headache I'd ever had in my life. But the next day, he had the real stuff, and he says, hey, you want to do this again? And for the next 7 years of my life, I don't hardly know a day that went by where I was not on something. But it was just so small. Because I had rejected something my Father had given me. And rejection will get you everywhere. And rejection will get you nowhere. And so I rejected that, and in my life, things had changed. And I want you to know that things changed here when they rejected God. Things went bad. The two things that Samuel said, God says, oh, go tell him these two things. He says, listen, if you reject God, here's what's going to happen. I wish somebody would have come to me on that day and said, Mitch, you want to smoke this? Oh, by the way, for the next 7 years of your life, you're going to get to the point of trying to commit suicide, leaving everything that you love behind and having a really great time doing it. If I'd have known that, I would have never touched it that day. Samuel stands up and says, okay, you want to reject God? Tell you what, here's what you get. For the rest of your life, you're going to get this. And it lists it, doesn't it? It says it right there. It says, tell them this. This is what the king, verse 11 says, who will reign over, this is what he will do. He will take your sons and he will make them serve with chariots and horses. They will run in front of the chariots. Some he will assign as commanders to thousands, some fifties, others to plow the ground, reap the harvest. Still others to make weapons for war. Military. He's going to have an army. He's going to draft some of your kids and they're going to go to battle. Does this sound familiar? Look at the second thing, verse 14. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain. Does this sound familiar? It's called taxes. You pay a little more than a tenth to the government's servants. And then I love what it says there. There's something else I just saw the other day. He will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage. He'll take a tenth of your grain, that's tax, and your vintage, and give it to his officials. Your vintage, that's that inheritance tax of 50% that just ran out again. Where when you die, all the money you made and paid taxes on, you give it to someone. Now they got to give half of it back to the government again. Does this sound familiar? This is where it all started. Right here. He says, I promise you this is what will happen if you want a king, a ruler over me instead of me. Now, can we go back to another way? I doubt it. But know this. Everybody talks about rejection in the elections. I've had people come, Pastor, what do you think about all these people? There's nobody to vote for. I've heard James Dobson say this is the first year ever. He's not going to vote from Focus on the Family. Just no one to vote for. There's just nobody to vote for. And I thought, that's wrong. I disagree personally. I think you have someone to vote for. I'm an American citizen. I have a vote. And they're worried about all these moral issues. Do you know that we don't, I don't know that there's been a single moment that the President of the United States has affected one single moral decision I've ever made in my life. He has never affected the way I choose in my sexuality, so I'm not worried about the President. He's never had a single decision he's made in my morality about abortion. He's never had a single decision in my family's life on the way I raise my children or the way we pray in our home. He's never had, or she will never have, that choice in my life. That can never be chosen or taken away from us. That is not the President. The President will decide military and money, how much they're going to tax you and what they're going to do with that money and how big our army will be and what they'll do with that army. Now, I'm not making light of what's happening. I think we should vote, and we should vote with a very godly conscience. But you know what? I'm not about to reject what God has given me because someone's rejecting my values. It doesn't matter what you think of my values. My values will always be godly because I've rejected the things of this world. And I've rejected them to the point where my insulation is so thick that the Shekinah God is like this, that the second S is sanctification. My family, we have set ourselves apart and said, this is the way we're going to live our lives. In fact, one of my children the other day asked me, Dad, do you think we could do this? It's going to be on Sundays. What do you think? I said, that's not going to happen in our home. Now, when you get out on your own, if you choose to do that on Sundays, that's up to you. But in our homes, we are sanctified. We set Sundays aside because God has asked us to set Sundays aside. That is not going to happen in our home as long as you're in my home. Because God has given us an insulation of his Shekinah, and he's given us a sanctification to say, be different from this world. Don't reject the things of God. The Ten Commandments, honor the Sabbath. Don't lie. Don't steal. Don't commit murder. Don't commit adultery. Love God with all your heart. Honor him with that. Have no other idols. We've chosen that in our house. That is the rules of our house. Those are the rules of our house. And we live by those. And then finally, the last R factor is this. In the very last thing that he says in our very last verse of 20, the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we want a king over us. In verse 20, then we will be like all the other nations with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our enemies. Folks, I don't want the U.S. government fighting my battles. I think it's a great military. I want God fighting my battles. That's a better military. I don't want to put my trust in horses and chariots, as the Scripture says. But we put our hope in the Lord our God. Some men may trust in chariots. Some may trust in horses. But we trust in the name of the Lord our God. And the last R factor is this, a refuge. I want my house right here to be a refuge. When I was a kid, I built more forts than I think many of you could probably even dream about. My dad got so mad because anytime he brought wood home, I was building another fort. I used up everything that he ever had in plywood. I dug holes. My mother, the yard, I had forts that she didn't even know about until she fell in them. I remember digging one time. It was a beautiful fort, and I took some of my dad's plywood. I had taken a knife, his tools. This doesn't sound unfamiliar. And I dug up all the grass, and then I'd rolled it. And then I dug the hole, and then I put the wood down so it fit on a ledge, and I'd rolled the grass right back over it. It was a great fort till my mom fell in. And then it was another Saturday night bath and spanking. I had more forts, but you know what? I think I learned as a kid, the thing about forts that I felt, it was secure. When it rained outside, I felt great just being in it. When my friends came over, we had battles, and it was great because my forts were sturdy. And I want you to know that the last R is this, that God wants us to have a refuge. My house, when my children come home, it ought to be a refuge in their lives. When my kids come home, they need to know it's a safe place. The Bible says the name of the Lord is a strong tower, and the righteous run in, and they are safe. We sang that today, didn't we? I sang that. I meant that. The name of the Lord is a strong tower, and the righteous do run into it. And I'll tell you what, the name of my God is a strong tower. And I go into it, and He absolutely engulfs me in His strong tower. And I feel safe. There's nothing in this world that can touch me. And as a child, I had that memory of sitting in forts on rainy days in California and thinking, this is the coolest, safest, driest place in the world. And my forts were dry. And I felt good about that. Now as an adult, I know this. No matter what happens in this world, I can run into the righteousness of God and feel safe. And I hope that children, that my kids, and I hope that your kids, and I hope that you can feel like your home is a safe haven. Folks, there's many of us even sitting in here today that do not feel like our house is that kind of safe haven because it leaks. And we need to get the glory of God in it to thicken and strengthen it up. And we need to start rejecting this garbage that's trying to get into the world. And we need to run in and give our family a place. Men, this is right to you. Men, get your tool belts out today. Get your tool belts. When you get home, take off the dress clothes. Get the tool belt on. Take off the jacket. Grab a hold of that tool belt, get into your house, and I don't care what you have to do, you look for the leaks in your house and you say, this is a leak in our house. This morality, if you've got porn in your house, this has got to go. This is a leak in our house. And honey, I want you to know that you're the beautiful thing. You're the thing that I admire in my home. She's not the thing that I'm dreaming about, that she's not even real anyway. And I'm going to get rid of that, and I'm going to fortify my house. And I'm going to bring the glory of God back in. If your kids are doing stuff and they're listening to stuff and they got garbage music and other things, and I don't usually preach shopping lists, but here we go, just one time. And if there's stuff in the house that's not glorifying to God, and you say, hey, it's okay, it's not that big a deal. You got a little leak in your house, you just wait. That dam is going to bust on you one day, and then you're going to be standing there soaking wet, everything wiped out, your family a mess, and you're going to say, what happened? It was just a small leak. And one little hit on a joint will spiral you for 7 years of your life. And we got to go, men. We got to put our tool belts on and say, you know what? It's time to patch up the house. I want my house to the name of the Lord. I want the name of the Lord. It is a strong tower, and the righteous will come in. My children, my wife will come into my house, men. And they will know that this is going to be a safe place. While the world isn't safe, this is safe. And if we can get that into our lives, you will change the world. People will look and go, what is it about your life? What is it about your house? I feel warm. And you know what? Let's get those cookies going. So when people walk in, they go, I love coming to this old house. And instead of looking at you and going, you're old. And your ways are old. They'll say, this is an old house. But it's so warm. I love this old house. I love this old house. I love running. I love going to grandpa and grandma's. It's an old house. But I love it. It makes me feel good. And God will do stuff in your life. When I was a kid, and I close with this. When I was a kid, I think I'd been in 3 fights in my entire life. And I remember the second fight. I was a teenager. And pretty much every kid from this gang was determined that I had to fight to be in the gang and to be cool. And so they picked another guy who was actually a friend of mine, and we had to fight. And they pushed us into each other, and they started using words, and this guy said this, and this guy said that. And I knew none of it was true, and I just sat there and said, that's not true. That's not true. And they kept doing that, and I wasn't a fighter. And it finally came down to it that this kid finally came over, and he punched me. And as he took a swing at me, I didn't want to fight. He didn't want to fight, but we knew that if this wasn't going to happen, they weren't going to let us go. And so in this large circle up the block from my house, just around the corner from the high school, a huge gang there, and Jim and I in this fight. And finally, I just grabbed a hold of his head, and I threw him down in a headlock, and I just held him and squeezed for dear life, thinking. And he said to me, if I get up from here, I'm going to kill you. I was so afraid that if he got up from there, he was going to kill me. I squeezed and I thought, I'll just hold him here forever. Then I thought to myself, this isn't going to last very long. And I thought, I'm going to run as fast as I can. And I let him go and I ran as fast as I could. And he chased me. And I don't think I've ever run so fast in my life. I got to my house. He was about 8 steps behind me. I opened our big, giant oak front archway door of this old house. And as I opened that big door, and it had one of those metal grates on it with the steel things where you could look out, like a castle door. And it was this huge house my dad had bought and fixed up, this old house. And I slammed that door, and I, boom, the bolt lock. And I opened up that metal gate thing where I could see him. And I was like, ha, 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 you can't get me. He says, if you ever come out of here, you're dead. I said, Mom. And she comes up, what's going on? I said, he's going to kill me. Oh, he's not going to get you. You're safe. You're home. And I was. I was safe because I was home. Our homes ought to be that way. I pray for your homes every week that God would make godly homes for you, for your relationships, your children, you, just for you. That your home would be a godly home. Today is about insulation. And the R factor, what comes after the R in this? It's S. And S simply is this. It just means sovereign. My God is in charge. And I'm okay with that. When I run home, I'm with my dad. And he can do anything. Let me pray with you. Let's stand together.